Hello, this is Nido Media reporting for Hacker Public Radio live at the Omroep on 104.7 FM. With me today is Dimitri, also known as Hobby Pop, and he's the team lead of the Light Operations Center. Dimitri, nice to meet you.
Hello, nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Okay, why don't you tell us a bit about who you are first? Let's begin with yourself.
Okay, my name is Dimitri Modderman, and also known as Hobby Pop. I'm a member of the Hackerspace Bitlayer in Amersfoort, in the Netherlands, and I'm also their secretary. So, and basically I'm interested in the making things within the hacker scene, so soldering, Arduinos, lasers, lights, LEDs, LEDs, everything that makes a color and is nice, then I'm interested.
Okay, and how did you get involved in the lights team here?
Okay, I was already for a long time in the hackerspace scene in the Netherlands, and I know Koen, GMC, and we did the intro for the when the hackerspace opened. I did a laser show, and a lot of people were invited. From there on, I was invited to come to CCC to do CCC Camp 2011, do the laser show in there in Vienevoort, which was a really nice experience, and my introduction to the hacker camps, which I totally love. And then after that, when we organized OHM, they asked me to be the team lead of the Light Operations Center and to build some cool shit.
Okay. Well, we have like 12 hectares of space here. And so you are the one responsible for all the lights that are blinking and switching and...
Yes, that's correct.
Around here.
We have 12 hectares of land. And when we started, the first question that came to mind was, do we rent stuff or do we... buy stuff to make stuff ourselves, and in a true hacker spirit we just decided to make everything ourselves except for the smoke machines. It crossed our minds for a few seconds to build our own smoke machines, very heavy ones, but then we thought we'd better focus on the lights, so therefore we did rent the smoke machines, and the rest of the lights we just built ourselves.
Okay, could you tell us a bit, also for the listeners who are not at the camp themselves, could you tell us a bit about the setup, like when you walk into the, at the entrance, what you see?
Yeah, basically what we did is we divided all the lighting in four groups. We have LED pixels, which are wrapped around the PVC tube, which is placed on a 4-meter high pole, which is across all the parts, the walking parts, the fire lanes on the fields. Next to that we have strips across the road. When you enter the main entrance, it's a 500 meter long entrance road, and if you walk there every 16 meters, there's a 5 meter strip across the road, and we can address each pixel individually. We have like a big display of 3,500 pixels, which is 500 meters long, and we can scroll stuff around it and make nice effects. And then the third thing we have is the bridges. For security reasons, the organization asked us to light the bridges, so we put some really cool, very bright LED pixels, RGB LED pixels, onto the bridges. And we use the same pixels on the big OHM sign, which I hope will appear in lots of photos, and it already has shown up on the Dutch television, where the presenter was in front of it. It's a big OHM sign, which is 2.5 meters high and 10 meters wide, and it says OHM 2013. And it's got lots of pixels, and also, of course, last but not least, we put all the pixels on the bar. So it's a 400 pixel display, 8x50 pixels, and we can scroll text on that and have cool effects, plasma effects and stuff like that.
Cool. And, well, it's not only limited to lights and LEDs, right? You also have the smoke machine you mentioned earlier, and you also had some flamethrowers.
Yes, I brought some flamethrowers. And basically what I did is I brought these, and I already met some people at the camp that built their own flamethrowers. So I want to look into that and probably have a big setup for the next years to come. And then the last thing is, of course, within the show aspect, is also the lasers, which I built myself. And it's the four RGB lasers. They have a power of 6 watts combined. So it's 24 watts of RGB laser power, and it's directed over all the parts of the field. The field is divided in a north field and a southwest and an east field. And I try to light up all the fields at night with my lasers.
And you have succeeded in that.
Thanks so much.
All right. You also have there's lights all over the cams which are used also for emergency lighting. Yep. But those are the PVC pipes you talked about earlier,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the sleeves have a mode that if somebody trips over the main cable going into the core of the centrally controlled system, then all the lights switch on to the emergency mode, which is basically a white light. So we always have light. If somebody disconnects a network cable or something, the controller is programmed to automatically go to a white setting and therefore lighting the parts, even when there is no network connection available or problems with the data flow occur or whatever.
So it basically defaults to a white light, so in case of emergency, when everything breaks down, except for, of course, the power to the thing itself, then you can still see stuff and walk around.
Yeah, that's correct. And basically one of the requirements we had when we designed the system, which I will talk about in a few minutes, is that we have software in place and it talks to our own hardware. So the hardware is basically divided in three controllers. The most important one is used for the strips. It was made by Bob. He's also a member in our hackerspace in Amersfoort. And what he did is basically take a ENC 28J60 board, which is basically an Ethernet board, and we made our own daughter board on top of it. And it's Atmega 328 driven, so people can control it themselves. And what basically what the controller does is take an Ethernet frame and translates it to an RGB strip output. So you can talk over Ethernet, you talk ArtNet packages, and the ArtNet packages decide which LED lights are.
Okay, so those are directly from the Ethernet frames.
Yes, all the poles are connected to the switches, and the switches are connected to the data flow, which is basically a port cabin mobile toilet with switches inside. And from there on, from one central location, the lock tower and the lock center, we can control all the lights on the field. So we have one central place. That was one of our requirements, to have a central place where we can control all the lights, put them in emergency mode, turn the police mode on, turn every effect on.
Could you tell us a bit about police mode?
Yeah, we decided it was fun that if the police entered the terrain, that we would welcome them with a sight they know. And it was the blue light of the flashlights they have on the car. So we made an effect that simulated the police flashlight. And whenever they enter the terrain, we have made a connection to the Asterix server. So you can dial the number, enter the secret password, and then all the lights turn blue.
All right. Did we miss any hardware? Is there something?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we have really the heart of the system is our own controllers, which I mentioned earlier. We have the controller that Bob made, and that's a small PCB. And from the PCB that takes the Ethernet frames and outputs the LED strip. There's two modes. You can set it to strips and you can set it to pixels. And you can use 5 volt or 12 volt inputs. The controller is very cheap and it's open source. So that's a very good news, I hope.
Yes, and there's even a GitHub link for this?
Yeah, that's true. If you search for Bobo 1-on-1 on GitHub, then you see LOC_controller. That's the controller. All the schematics are in there, the board files, the drill files. So you can just send it off to your PCB manufacturer and you can have a very cheap board. I think the board is only €1 to produce and it's like €9 in parts. So for €10 you can build your own Ethernet to LED strip controller. Yeah, we hope a lot of people will do that. So the development of the software also continues.
That's good news. Yeah, we will put a link to this on the show notes. If after the show we need to get together and then we'll find the links we'll put it in the show notes for the Hacker Public Radio.
Let's go next to the Bob controller. We have also the controller that Bas made, SA007. He's from Hack42. He built a brilliant controller that from an old payment terminal, so it didn't cost us really much money. It takes Ethernet in and it outputs DMX, so not LED strip, but DMX protocol.
DMX is a lightning protocol.
Yeah, it's used for controlling lights and it's very well known in the lighting industry. It's basically the standard to control all the lights. And then the DMX signal goes to an RGB dimmer, basically. It's a DMX RGB dimmer. So it's a 10-channel RGB, so 30 channels in total, controllable over DMX. So you first talk to Ethernet to the small controller, which is made from the payment terminal, which is programmed to take the DMX protocol, strips it off, and then sends pure DMX to the controller, and then we are allowed to control 10 RGB floodlights, because on every track tent there is floodlights, and the floodlights we can control also centrally.
Okay. So that's all the hardware. Well, apart from probably the individual lights, but I don't think we should really go into that particularly. I mean, who really minds who made the LED light? But you also have a software application which you use in order to control this all in the lock tent.
Yeah, that's correct. There's basically two pieces of software. We build our own software. Basically, the part that talks and that communicates with the hardware is the lock ArtNet proxy. That's also built by Bob. And we had some brilliant programmers coming over from England, Kevin and Kat. And these teamed up with Bob and they made the software really amazing. And what basically the ArtNet proxy does is that it takes the signal from a controlling laptop. And that can be either self-written software or Matrix, which we're so kind to sponsor us with the 128 universe version of their Matrix software, which is very easy to create cool effects. And all that software talks to the ArtNet proxy, and the ArtNet proxy basically divides the field up in the field where the lightning poles are with the PVC tubes with the LED strips wrapped around them. The bridges is a separate section, the main path is a separate section, the ohm sign is a separate section, and the bars is a separate section. So it's all split up, and we can use four or five different people talking to different parts of the field at the same time. And the proxy just takes it all and sends it out. And at this moment, we do like roughly 35 megabits a second of DMX control stuff or ArtNet packages over the whole field. So we have a constant stream of 35 megabits per second to control all the lights.
Okay, and this is going over the same network as the rest of the networking gear? Or
no.
Do you have a separate...
No, we have a separate VLAN. We thought it was a bit safer to prevent people just plugging in and controlling our lights. But we made the ArtNet proxy to give the people the chance to talk to our lights, but via the ArtNet proxy. So the ArtNet proxy is in a separate VLAN. And if you are allowed from the switch in the lock tent, we have access to the lock server. And from the lock server, you talk to the lights on the field.
Okay, and you had the Matrix software, but there were also people who came in and just brought you working gear or
something? Yeah, that was even nicer. We had the software from the beginning from Matrix, which were so kind to sponsor us, 264 universe dongles. Funny thing is, they came in first with 64 universes, and we told them that was not enough. So that was really funny. So they had to get a second dongle, because else we wouldn't be able to control all the lights on the field with one dongle. So they expanded our loaned controllers. But next to that, what's really funny was, from the start on, when we turned on all the systems, people start programming effects themselves and making connections to the Asterix phone system to have phone controllable lights. And then somebody came in, a really nice guy with a Python script, and what it did basically was make a flame. And he said, "Can I use this flame on your poles?" So we gave him a 45-minute introduction to the software. And then he went away, and we thought he never came back. But after 2 days, he came back. We plugged in the effect, and it worked. And we have now at night very beautiful, like candles. So the poles look like candles, really nice lights with the flame flickering. It's a really cool effect to see over all the poles in the field. It's really impressive, and it's nice to see that people can generate user content for this. We're also working on the bandwidth monitor, so you can see the actual use of the bandwidth of the line, the 10 gig uplink. So that's really cool. And next to that, we're working on a sound to input, sound to light, so we can plug into your stream, for instance, and stream it. And when you talk, all the lights in the field work like a graphical analyzer.
That's cool. Okay. Let's see. Can you tell us a bit more about the proxy system?
Yeah,
how that works?
Yeah, the proxy is basically one box in the NOC data center, because that's next to us, and we really wanted to be close to that. And basically it takes the input for the from the various sources, like the laptops or scripts or the Asterix server,
mm-hmm.
shooting off scripts on the server. And then basically from there we can map also universes. So it's very easy to add some lights. If the lights at the entrance gate needed to be added, we just add them. and then you can easily do a mapping, and you can say, okay, this is the section entrance, and if you send something, it only goes to entrance and it doesn't disturb the other fields. And it's very handy, because with like 200 universes, which we are now controlling, it's all sometimes very hard, because the poles are sometimes 800 meters across, and then it's very hard to find where each pole is. So we had like a system that pulls with ArtNet pole all the systems, and then we know which MAC addresses belong to which pole. So we have like basically a translation on the map from which pole is where and which MAC address it is. So we can talk to it and group it into groups.
Okay.
And the funny thing is that one of our users made a log file. So if somebody turns on the blue light, we get on our old Telex. We have an old Telex teletype. And it prints out on the roll. It prints out who activated the blue lights. So we have a log file on paper to see what time somebody activated the blue light system. So it's really funny to have an old style logging system. It's really funny.
Yeah, you used it in the hackerspace. You used that to read the Twitter accounts,
yeah,
right?
It's a Twitter Telex, as it's called. It's a Hack42 project. Really, it's really funny. You can send stuff to the Twitter Telex, and it comes out on paper, and you can use the Telex to write messages, and they become visible on Twitter. And
okay.
We just modified it a bit, so it's really funny. If you hear the machine go off, you know that the lights go on, and you can see who turned it on. It's really funny in old-fashioned, old school.
All right, and you also built a big tower next to the log tent?
Yeah, that's correct. The highest tower on the field is the log tower. It's 9 meters high, and on the top is 4 RGB lasers, which we talked before about. It's the 6-watt RGB laser I built myself. And I got some sponsored by a friend, which is the same design as I did. So we built our own lasers. They got the green and the red modules we buy, but the blue modules we make ourselves from old Casio projectors, or not really the old ones, but the new ones with the laser diodes inside. And each Casio diode, depending on the module, can do something about 1.4 watts to 2.7 watts per module. So you can build your own blue modules very cheaply and have lots of power.
Okay, and there's the seekers, moving heads?
These are moving heads or scanners. And we have 2 moving heads in the center of the structure. We have 2 projectors, which we use a Resolume to project cool images on the big track tent. We have the projection mapped. And then on the top is 6 Martin scanners, and which we use to control all the lights. So we have a big light setup with 6 scanners, 4 lasers, 2 moving heads, and a big ass smoke machine.
Yes. And you're also responsible for the party lightning and the ads, right?
Yes, that's correct. Together with Big Bang Productions and the Team Avid, Team Rehash, we just made one big party tonight, and we hope lots of people come and join in the fun.
Can you tell us a bit about the plans you have for the lightning inside the tent?
Okay, we have to do it very quick in guerrilla style, because the last speaker finishes at 7, and at 9 o'clock the party is supposed to start. So normally you have a lot of time to build to hang the lasers and to do the beam and animation map to make it safe for the audience. You don't want to cut and lose time in that, so that's a really important part of rigging the lasers. But next to that, we will have to install the flamethrowers if they are allowed. We're now talking to the rental firm of the tents if that's allowed. So then we have flamethrowers inside, and then we have some moving heads and stuff which is already there, which we're going to incorporate in the show. So basically we're going to have a kick-ass party, I hope, and have lots of fun.
Okay, yeah, we also already talked a bit about the flamethrowers, but I believe most people, or at least me, before I came here, the idea of a flamethrower is a guy with some tank on his back and a big fire out of a gun, that kind of thing. I'm assuming this is not that kind of thing.
No, as always, you can have you can use technology for good and bad, and well, your example is probably, in my eyes, a bad example to burn people and stuff. But this is a for show example. The laser is pointing, the flamethrower is pointing upwards to have a nice flame effect. And we try to incorporate that, that's at least what I want, into the laser harper performance of Greg tonight. We have Greg over. He's the guy from Britain's Got Talent, which did laser harp in the show. We had him over. And tonight he's going to perform and play some chiptune mix up with Mario and Avicii and stuff like that. Really cool stuff. And he's going to use one of the RGB lasers for that.
And you are also responsible for the laser harp?
No. Greg brought it himself. He didn't build it himself. He's like an artist and plays it very well, I might add. And we just want to spice up the performance. And I hope we can use the flamethrowers in the performance.
Okay. Let's see. Is there anything else you would like to mention before we continue?
Yeah, it didn't really answer your question. I was just thinking that it really didn't answer your question about the flamethrower. So, yeah, basically the flamethrower is like a very fast-acting valve. It's operating on 220 volts. And basically there's a high-voltage spike in front of it. So whenever it's activated, it's DMX controlled. So whenever it activates, and then it lights the spark between the two prongs. And then the valve opens and the gas comes out. And then you have a big fireball or a flame. You can choose it. If you open it very short, you get like a big poof. And if you open it longer, you get like a real big flame gulfing in the air, like going up. And it's across approximately 2.5 meters high. You can have other machines that do bigger flames. But for the shows I do, I rather use this one and have lots of 2.5 meter ones. And have a really big flamethrower, because then else you set stuff on fire, like woods and forests and tents.
That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, earlier when we were talking, you mentioned to me that every single LED that's on the field here can be addressed and altered individually.
Yeah, that's correct. We have like 70,000 pixels on the LED sleeve that are on the field. Like 125 poles all around the field, and each pole has a strip with 150 LEDs, and then we have the LED strips across the road, across the main path. It's 21 strips of 150 pixels, so there's also 3,000 pixels. The bridges have pixels, the bar has 400 pixels, and the ohm sign has 350 pixels. So we have in total around 23,000-25,000 pixels, and each pixel can be turned on individually.
Okay, let's see. Can you tell a bit more about the lighting on the bridges?
Yeah, the bridges use a very nice waterproof pixel. It's basically a metal can with a PCB inside, and it's epoxied in. So it's a clear epoxy, so it's really waterproof, and it uses like an SPI type signal to drive the LEDs. It's basically either the WS2812 pixel controller, and then... there's four LEDs on each pixel, so they're really bright. It's like 1.5 watt per pixel. And imagine on the bar, for instance, is 400 pixels. That's 600 watts of LED power shining towards you. It's really bright. And on the bridges, it's also like 75 watts of LED pixels on each side of the bridge. That's really cool.
But at least you know you what the point is from where you're going to fall off and into the river.
Yeah, and we got some reports from the ISS, the International Space Station, that they saw the light lit up.
That's cool. Okay.
No, that was a joke.
Okay. Well, there's the main road with the LEDs. You've already mentioned them a few times. Would you like to continue a bit about those?
Yeah, it would be. Is very nice is that every pole, as said before, is an own DMX universe. That's 150 pixels RGB value. So you need 450. Channels of a 512 channel DMX universe, so we almost use it fully up. And then it was really hard to get the effect going from one universe to the other, and with Madrix it was very easily be controllable, and we couldn't even display text along the field. Imagine the road is 500 meters long. If you stand on the beginning of the road, you see really cool effects going across, and finally we have it finished. So tonight we'll turn it on and have like a Knight Rider over a 500 meter stretch, and Knight Rider effect and all kinds of stuff. We have a bouncing ball, we can play Pong across it, and really cool. So yeah, that's really nice.
Whoa, you can actually do Pong on the lights on the road?
At this moment not, but the programming team is working very hard on that, to play Pong on the road and have two bats on each side and play Pong over a 500 meter stretch. That would be really, really funny.
That would be a really interesting experience. I will definitely check it out later when I'm...
You should. And also for the people on the fields, it's really fun to see that the effect goes across all the fields. So if you're next to the bar area, you see all the lights going past you and back and forwards. It's really cool.
Okay. The LEDs on the bridge, you said that was that. How are they integrated into the system? Because it's not a DMX system.
No, it's also ArtNet, and under each bridge is a PVC tube which has a HP server power supply, because those can do like 58 amps at 12 volts. So you have a really high power output, so you can do some several strings connect to that thing. We made a PVC tube, a really big one, put the power supply in and made it watertight. And it's underneath the bridges, and it controls, the controller is also in there, and it controls the LED strip on each side of the bridge.
And that gets the DMX signal from the Matrix controller.
Yeah, well, basically ArtNet, yes, but it's sort of DMX over IP, so the ArtNet packages are sent to the controller, it strips it off, and then it sends the RGB system, the RGB strips, the SPI code to the strips.
Okay, yeah, you were telling you might wanted to do building a smoke machine yourself. What was the final, why didn't you in the end?
Well, in the end it was, to be honest, it was time constraints because we wanted to focus on the lights.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some actual setup in our Hackerspace Biddler in the Netherlands. We used, ring-shaped transformers. I don't know the English name for it, but they're like the toroidal transformers, and we put a tube through it, and there was like 340 amps of current running through the tube at about 1 volt. So basically we had a 300 watt element, and if you just put water in it with a squishing bottle, if you put water in it, it immediately evaporated. So our plan was to buy demi water and glycol, which is basically the components of smoke fluid, and then mix them together to have like 2,000 liters of smoke fluid, and let them run continually through the tubes and set the whole field on, in the smoke, in the cloud, as we say.
In the cloud.
But we will continue to try to make our own smoke machine, because if you have to buy the big one we have now, it's an output of 5,000 cubic meters per minute, which is really, really a lot, then you're out of pocket with like $8,000 or something, and if you can build it for maybe €100, would be nice.
Yeah, indeed.
In true hacker spirit, we want to build our own shit, so let's try it.
Yes, you already told about the guy who came in and who brought you a Python script, which turned the PVC LEDs into a flame effect. I've seen it running, and it's really cool. Are there on any other effects which people just came in and brought you and gave you?
Not yet, but people are working on it. I know people from Technology Incognita, the hacker site, the hackerspace in Amsterdam. They have a board and they have a flame simulation as well, like a flame open fire simulation. And these guys wanted to try to have that simulation on the ohm sign. So you see the ohm sign in flames, and yeah, well, it would be a really cool effect. So, and I ask everybody that is still on the field and wants to contribute and think he can write a program for it, please contact the LOC. You can call us at LOC, and then we can set you up, and then hopefully you can see your own effects tonight on the 120 poles, or maybe along the path, or the ohm sign, or the bar, whatever you like. So I really encourage people to write effects for it, and we hope that this is the start to have an event lighting system, which we maybe even can use on EMF camp or CCC camp, or that we just can bring along, because we have paid for this stuff. It's basically here, and it's a bit of a shame to take it all apart, but we have to decide on what to do after the event with that. But I hope it will be the start of a nice lighting setup that we can use to help other events and make cool effects and start and keep developing on to keep it and to make it a better system.
Okay, let's see. The controller of Bob that he created—that's a really central part of the system, right?
Yes, that's correct. And it was really up and running. We put a lot of work preparing it in advance. Imagine you have the 50-centimeter PVC tube. There needs to be a block in the middle to hold the power supply that it doesn't fall off on the other side. Needed to be open on the bottom side to have condensation and stuff that builds up during the night to leave that out. The strip is wrapped on the outside. It's water, fully IP 67 waterproof, So you can just wrap it around, and we taped it up and down with gaffer tape and a tie wrap. And then on top is a cap tool that's keeping the water out of the controller. So it's basically a tube, block in the middle, power supply, 8 amps, 5 volt. On top of that is Bob's controller, and on top of that is a cap to make it waterproof. And we put two screws in the side with a metal wire, so we can, with a boat hook, we can hook the controller to the poles.
Okay. The LED strips which are on the road, did you also assemble those yourself?
No, unfortunately, or fortunately not. They were produced in China, and we ordered loads of them, and it was really funny to see the supplier first and the test sample very quickly. So we thought, oh wow, this is really cool. And then we ordered like 140 strips, and he was like totally in panic because he had to fabricate and manufacture 700 meters of LED strip for us. And he was constantly saying, it's coming, and I'm just busy, busy. And then in the end, we just stressed him a bit, but then finally he delivered. So just the week before the event, we were wrapping LED strips around PVC tubes in a lot of hacker spaces, and I thank everybody for their assistance.
Are there any other lights which you want to talk about, how they were created?
Well, basically with the spotlights, the floodlights we have, mm-hmm. we could build a big light setups in the future, because we have 400 of these. But these were owned by SA007. He paid for all the lights, so it was really funny to have somebody helping us out and keep the budget, cut the budget, because he bought them basically, and I rented them from him for the event. So it was basically a good setup. So we don't own the spotlights, but they're really very bright and very nice, and we can use them to make in the future maybe other installations, or we can sell them. It's up to SA007 to decide about that.
Okay, well, you mentioned the floodlights a few times. For people who have no idea what that means, could you explain to us what floodlights are?
Yeah, it's basically a small vector lamp. It looks a bit like a construction light. Normally these have 500 watts of halogen light bulbs in them. Mm-hmm. And this is a very small version of that. It's basically maybe 10 centimeters wide and 6 centimeters high. It's got a lot of LEDs inside at a very small die. So it's basically a 2 by 2 centimeter die. And in there is 3 1 watt LEDs of each color. So there's 3 watts of red, 3 watts of blue, and 3 watts of green. And it's sold as a 10 watts. So we got a bit, it's not really a 10 watts. It's actually 9 watts.
Okay, I heard you explained it a bit differently to the people who are staying over at Veld W.
Oh, did I?
Or at least it was explained differently to those people. What I heard was that they were told that by the time, if that light is going on, that means that there's excess water, and then the field is going to be flooded, so it's not the rest of the Netherlands that gets underwater.
Yeah, there was a good troll, and we also projected it with a laser on the beam on the trees. So it said that a warning, flash flood zone. So that really got some people scared and running to the organization to ask what was this all about. If the field was really flooded, that was actually quite funny.
Okay, let's see. Can you tell us a bit more about the software, about the Matrix software?
Yeah, the Matrix software was kindly loaned to us for the duration of the event by Invent Design in Amsterdam. It's basically a lightning design company. And these are the Dutch resellers for the Matrix software. And it's a very easy software to control and quickly make effects. And if you want, people can always check it out on the website. And I hope that someday there will be an open source variety of the software. So it would be nice to have some people developing our own open source software, so everybody can use it with the open source controller, and the whole part will be open source. But for now, we are very happy with their sponsoring, mm-hmm. and it's very easy to create text effects, especially to make them scroll over the bar. And it's got some very nifty features in there to make mappings, so you can make a very big patch, as they call it, where all the lights are mapped to the controller, so basically have an overview of the areas, which are the bar in the field, and you can draw in everything where it is, And then you can make a mapping to a certain controller. So you can assign groups of controllers, and you can do effects over all the controllers, or map out a single piece and just have a scrolling text on the bar while the Starfield emulation, for instance, is running on the field. So that's really, really nice.
So you recreate like more or less bitmaps of groups of lights which are somewhere on the field, and if they are close together
bitmap,
and you met...
But it's an overview indeed. It's an overview. The patch function allows you to say how much Y and X in how much fixtures, as it's called in DMX, fixtures, mm-hmm. how many of those you have, and each LED pixel is a fixture in this case. So one strip is 150 fixtures. And these are drawn in into this patch, which is basically an overview. And then from there you make the mapping in the device manager. So in the device manager you see all the ArtNet devices, and you can do an art poll. You can press the art poll button, and then it pulls on the whole network all the devices, and they all respond with their ArtNet address, and then you can just assign them, which is a very nifty feature, because else you have to manually add each of these features. So.
Okay, and then you basically have, so you have then your mapping of fixtures, and let's say you have like the lights on the road, for example. That's like you said every 16 meters there's a pole with the lights on them, and
yeah.
That's like how many LEDs is that across?
It's 150 LEDs. It's 30 LEDs per meter, and the strips are 5 meters long.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two poles on each side of the road, and so the strip crosses the road.
Okay, but as far as the controlling software is concerned, that's basically 250 by 500 divided by 16 things.
It's really actually only 21 lines,
mm-hmm.
but they're spread around at 500 meters. So it's 21 times we cross the road with a 5-meter strip. So it's basically a display of 21 pixels high and 150 pixels wide.
And that's the way you control it in the control room?
That's the way we control it in the control room. We map it out. And you can even use other software to control Madrix. So Madrix also has a DMX input. So from a DMX table or a Shamsys system or a Freestyler or whatever, with a certain plugin, you can control Madrix and send out stuff as well. So you do all the cues you set up, and then you can use a simple DMX controller to just output them by just pressing a button or something. So it's really cool. You can really hook them together. And Madrix is used in most of the nightclubs around Europe, and maybe some in America as well, and Ibiza. And it's got the ability to control like millions of LEDs, like 1.3 million or something. So it's really cool. And you can also control DMX screens, so because some of the new Chinese-made LED panels have a DVI interface. So you can just daisy chain them together and have like really, really, really lots of LEDs.
Cool. Can you tell us a bit about the effects that you play on those systems?
Yes, of course. There's the basic color change, which has a fading color. And then next to that you have a color ramp, which is basically like a rainbow. So it's really cool for Rainbow Island. So you can scroll the rainbows across. And then of course the text effects and the plasma balls and the meter balls. And
meter balls?
Yeah, it's like balls that bounce up and down and really expanding. So you have expanding rings of light on the whole field. And from the lock tower I can tell you it's a really impressive sight. So if people are interested, they can come to Team Lock and we can show them around. But for tonight, we tear the lasers down and bring all the stuff down, but the lights are still viewable from there, and you can make some beautiful pictures of the scenery of the whole camp with all the lights on.
Okay, yes, you're going to set up the party in a few hours. Can you tell us a bit about the setup you're going to build there?
Well, we have four lasers on site on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be an extra RGB laser in the center for the laser harp performance, which people can hopefully see on a stream or on a recorded video, because the cameras also stay in the room. And then we have the four moving heads. The moving heads are programmed by Big Bang Productions, and we have some truss, which also has some LED LED lights and pixel effects.
The moving head, that's basically a beam of light which can move around.
Yeah, the moving head can rotate 360 and can do also tilt. So you can tilt it all the way around, so you can turn it on to back to the backdrop of the stage, so you can project stuff behind the DJ, or you can just flip them around and go over the ceiling and go into the audience, and you can basically have a full 360 around light effect. And then we have a very powerful sound system, which we checked last night, and it was going very, very loud in the lock tent, which is basically 30, 40 meters behind the tent. Stuff was rumbling on the table, and that was not even on 30% of power. So we hope we have enough musical power as well. And then we all work together. That's really nice. And we have people from Schubert Phyllis that arrange for the audio speakers. And we have people from the Big Bang Productions, which arrange all the lights and all the stage material. And then there's Team Lock that fills in all the gaps and adds the lasers and makes a nice party, I hope.
Mm-hmm. And you will be controlling the lights on the party.
I will be controlling the lasers on the party, and Big Bang will control the DMX lights and the moving heads on the stage and the lights of the speakers and the performances, so that the artists are also good, are well visible on the stage, and we do the lasers. So it's a cooperation of the three teams together.
Okay, and then you will also be will you also be using the lightning mixer?
We will not use the lock controller. That one will run outside. We will try to have an audio feed plugging into the to the LOC VLAN, the lock VLAN, and try to control the lights and have the sound of light work on the whole field with the audio that's played in the room by the Eindbaas DJs, which are really awesome, and the live performance of Craig with the laser harp. So every sound he makes will have some effect on the lights on the field. So it's really cool to have a connection between inside and outside.
Yes. Is there anything you'd like to say a bit more about?
Yeah, maybe for the people that are listening that want to build their own lasers, there's a really, really cool forum. It's called photonlexicon.com. We can add it to the speaker notes in the end. It's a really cool forum about building your own lasers. So if you are interested in building lasers, I can only say do it, because it's the most awesome thing you can do. And it's really nice to have your own lasers and project text on buildings that are 600 meters away and have some really really great fun with that, or do openings for other hackerspaces or make other laser-related projects. You should really check out photonlexicon.com. And there's also a lot of times there's meetings across USA and England and Europe. There are lots of meetings that's called Laser Enthusiast Meets, and they're really, really cool. And you should definitely check the site out and go to the section of the meets and greets and the laser meetings, and check out if there's one in your neighborhood, so you can learn more about lasers, because that's a really awesome hobby, I think. And yeah, it's really nice to build your own lasers, and especially your own laser modules, even so it's not only build modules and then RGB, and then put together with the galvanometers, the scanner set, and then some power supplies, but you build your own stuff. Is really, really awesome. And you can do it on a budget.
Galvanometers?
Galvanometers, yes. The galvanometers are the mirrors that control the beams. So the lasers is basically one, two, or three modules or more. You can add as much as you like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You add them together. The beams are added together by a dichroic mirror, and then that's basically a color mixing device.
Mm-hmm.
You put in a blue beam and a green beam, and on the other side you get a cyan beam, and you mix that again with a red beam, for instance, and then you have white. So then you have RGB. You can mix it, and you have all the colors. And the last step is of the combined beam to get onto a pair of mirrors, which are angled at a 90-degree angle, and they take in the beam, they reflect it upwards and then outwards to the projector. And these two beams can do the X and Y movement.
Okay, and that's the galvanometer.
Yeah, galvanometer is the name, and most people call it scanner set or scan set. And you have different speeds in there and qualities, of course. But you can have a very low-tech one for around probably $50 if you look around on eBay. And you can go up to thousands of euros if you want to spend it. Then you have really big mirrors and a very fast moving coils.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to continue on this subject, how long have you been working with lasers?
Well, maybe 22 years ago, I was in technical school, and then my teacher came in and brought me one of a very small helium neon tube, 1.5 milliwatts, and they were used in cash registers in supermarkets, and these tubes were out of specification because they were used along, they were always on. So these were basically just worn off a bit, and they did probably 1 milliwatt of output. It got a really high voltage, 8,000 volts to light the tube, and after it's running, it drops down to 1,500. It's high power, high voltage, low power, but high voltage laser beams. But it was really nice. I built my own pair of scanner mirrors with DC motors, which I drive with like sine waves, and played around with it, and sort those and make all kinds of different patterns. Then I just basically, started working, forgot a bit about it, and then maybe 20 years later, like maybe 5 years ago or something, I saw an ad for a person that sold a green laser. And the green laser back in the times, 20 years ago, was really a magical thing, because the only thing that can make a green laser back then was an argon laser, which was a really high gas-powered laser, which is gas inside a tube with a very high voltage. You need like three phase and lots of amps, and you couldn't even start it probably in your own home because it took 63 amps of three phase. So then I was like, wow, really green, 150 milliwatts. Oh, really cool, lots of power way back then. So I just thought, I decided to buy the green laser, and then it was sitting on my desk, and it was just outputting one ray of green light, and I was like, and now? So I just moved it around by hand, which was very slow and tedious. So I was like, okay, and now? So then I discovered the Photon Lexicon forum, and these guys just helped you around and say, hey, okay, welcome to the forum, and they gave you tips and advice, and then basically I started building my first 150 milliwatt of green, and it was really nice, and to do some small parties and then bigger parties, and then you needed lots of power and you wanted more colors. So then basically from there on, so 5 years ago, I just started on and moved towards what I have now, which is like five RGB projectors.
Okay, so you built like the actual laser. You also built like an actual laser?
Well, I built
like the light itself?
I take the diodes from the Casio projector, and I put them into a block, which I make myself with a drill press and just some aluminium parts. And then from there on, you have to tidy up the beam, as we say. And the standard beam from a blue Casio diode is very wide. It has a very the fast axis, as they say, is really fast diverging. So if you turn it on the wall, it will become a stripe of 1 meter high after a few meters. So it's not really usable for show use. But then you can compress the beam by two components, which are basically called the prism pair. So you have two triangles, and you just shine the light through it, and then you end up with a very, very nice and tight beam, which has all the power inside the beam. It's very visible. And then from there on, you buy two other colors, or you build your own reds, which is also possible now. And the latest development is the green diode, which we look very much forward to, because back in the days, green was made from infrared, and infrared was put through two crystals, and then from the other side, you get green beam, so infrared, which transformed into green. So basically then you have R, G, and B, and then you can make them all together, and then you can make white. And white light is basically really nice, and to have the power to create every color imaginable.
Cool, yeah. We have about 10 minutes left. Do you want to tell a bit about your own setup you have?
Yeah,
your laser setup.
I can do that. I built all my lasers from aluminium because they're very. If you make them from another metal, probably heavy if you use iron or steel plates. And so I do all in aluminium for the peoples in Europe. And you can easily do it yourself. You can use a Dremel. You can cut it, and it's easy with a belt grinder. And you can just easily make the parts yourself. It's very cheap. It can be sourced locally, or you go to the scrap dealer and just buy some piece of metal and make it. Most important thing is the base plate. Base plate needs to be flat, because you have to align optics. So you have a base plate that is already a bit bent, and you put all the optics on it, and you screw the case together, and maybe the plate gets straightened, then all your alignment is off. So and next to that, then you have to buy the parts, of course. Well, eBay is a nice starting point, but also on the forum, I just mentioned Photon Lexicon is a big for sale section where people sell their old stuff if they move on to bigger configurations or try to decide to stop this awesome hobby, which sometimes happens. And then you source all your parts, and a power supply is very important to have good stable power and have good output. And then there's lots of tutorials on the site, and which can help you build your own projector. But basically, you mix the colors together. You go to the galvanometers, the mirrors, and then outside, and then you have several designs. You can do their power supplies on the bottom. You can put them anywhere you like, actually. But most of the time, people make it a split level design, and they just have the base plate and all the modules on top to make a clean room, to have no interaction with the outside air, and then have all the electronical components in the down part of the projector, the bottom side, and then have fans blowing around it and make a supply for good air. So basically that's...
So it doesn't overheat.
So it doesn't overheat. And that's really important. I have had some gigs where the laser had to be positioned over some very high powered lights, and then in the end of the evening you see that the temperature inside the projector is really going up, and then to the point that the thermal protection kicked in and then turned off the laser because it was overheating actually. And then I was like, that's strange. It normally doesn't do that. So I checked it out and I saw that there was like 50 degree air coming off from the light, and it was sucked in directly to my laser, which also heated up. So that was not good. So good airflow is really important to keep your lasers working nice and tight. And have a big base plate that can dissipate the heat, and then basically take some time to do the wire properly. Grounding is a very important issue. Some people leave the ground floating, which is A, dangerous, and B, can make problems with the projections. If you have the projections, you can have very strange effects happening, or the image isn't stable, it's flickering, or it's moving about. Then it's, most of the time it's a grounding problem. So always take the proper precautions to have a proper grounding and ground everything to earth, and make sure that it's all connected properly, and use good quality connectors, and it's safety. If you start with lasers, that's really, really, which I want to emphasize, is be careful. Because nowadays, when we started this out with the 1.5 milliwatt helium neon tube, okay, you have to be careful with this 1.5 milliwatts, but nowadays you talk about 2.7 watts of blue power from one diode, and you just can buy them online. You can just put power on it, use a current sink or a current limit driver, and then basically 2.7 watts comes out, and it's very dangerous for your eyes. So watch out whatever you do.
A current sink?
Yeah, it's a driver that that basically powers a diode. If you turn on the diode straight on a power supply and you don't limit the power, it's actually, you can fry the diode in seconds. So you always have to limit the current through the diodes. So most of the time for the blue diodes, you have something between 1.5 amps and up to power it. But if you overdo it, you see it overheating, and then some optical damage can occur, and after that just the diode is just a very expensive LED which have a very dim light. So basically that's not good. So you need something to limit the current, but if you have even an LED driver, you can use that to drive a laser diode.
Okay. Let's see. Do you want to say something about your own personal setup before the end?
Yeah, at this moment I use Pangolin software, which is basically not open source, very closed source maybe. And after OM, I would like to see if there's people around in the hacker community that want to work with me to see if we can build something open source again, just to have some cool controllers that can do all the stuff we want. But it's open source, so we have lots of people working on the project, and see if we can make the software happen and make this something really from the community, and that all the features that people want to put in can be put in and have a nice project. But it's for the future. But I really would love to see forward to have open source software, which is available to everyone and can be used to drive laser projectors. So you can really build a cheap projector, but you're not bound and not committed to buying really expensive software. It would be nice if everybody can have their hands on a cool setup and could be able to do live controlling of lasers and in a safe way and in an enjoying way.
Yes, I'm assuming then that the Pendrix is a software similar to the Matrix software we talked about earlier.
Pangolin is a software which is very easily and really nice and configurable. I really like it. I do all my shows with it at this moment. But then again, as said, it's very closed source. The controllers cost like $595 US for the cheap ones, which is USB, and the Ethernet ones are more expensive. Really have a nice feature set and really cool effects, and all the stuff is very easy. There's an auto trace function in it to easily trace bitmaps and stuff like that. But I don't see a reason why it cannot be open source. I mean, you can have that software, but you need people to write it. And since I cannot code myself, I would love to bring the people together. I have a lot of great ideas about it. I can help think about software, but we really need people that really want to help out and program this stuff, and we can do that. So I hope the community is willing to help, and we can make this an awesome project.
Okay, well, we're nearing the end of the show. And, well, what's the biggest laser you have at the moment? That's the last question.
It's a 6.5 watt RGB. It's got 4 watts of blue. It's got 3 watts of green. And it's got 3 watts of red. And for a total of a combined output of a balanced white of 6.5 watts. But if you turn it all on, we can get to over 8 watts.
Over 8 watts, and that's
one centrally located in the LOC tower.
It's here in the tower right now.
It's in the tower right now, and it's cranking out a 6.5 watt ride, so it's really nice.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. I've really learned a lot, I think, and I hope that other people are also happy with the information. We'll put the sites in the show notes, and we'll put a link to your new project in the show notes. So people who are listening to this later on the Hacker Public Radio or through the streams, then they can also look at the project and see what you can help out.
Really great. Thank you so much for the invitation, and thank you so much, Nido.
You're welcome. I'm happy you were here, and I'm happy you had the time between all the lightning work to tell us what was happening here.
Yeah, it was just possible today. The other days wasn't possible because we were very busy doing lights over the whole terrain. So thanks again for the invitation, and I hope a lot of people that are on the terrain now will join the party tonight at 9 o'clock, starting in track 1.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.